Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super-duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage!
You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us, and enjoy the show.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show, spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good-looking for television. And now, here they are, America's last best hope to make the internet safe for absolutely no one, two people who will do pretty much anything for a pizza, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
I feel like we need to amend that opening since we have toppings now. Two people who do anything for a pizza with toppings.
It's true. We had to negotiate with our corporate masters since 501c Heritage Radio Network pays us in pizza.
You know what? We didn't take advantage of the toppings.
I'm pushing for a calzone. When we get a calzone.
Whoa, you have to do those.
That here at Heritage Radio, it's sort of like having like your name on Hollywood Boulevard. Being able to get a calzone
for
the show.
It's like your gold watch and a star.
But where else do all the guests get pizza? Name one other radio show.
We already heard that the Today Show has a non-working pinball machine in the green room. We have a bar filled with cute people.
And especially today on Cinco de Mayo. It's a little obnoxious, to be honest with you. And yet here there are the people at the awkward date table.
We need TV. They're so miserable with each other. I think they had really bad sex and they never want to see each other, but they were talked into having breakfast together. Could they be more miserable? Anyway, we have two lovely ladies here today.
Today is too hot for television, to be sure.
Yes. We have Lux.
We're probably going to get thrown off the radio network for today's show.
Everyone's naked, too. Mike, I really wish you would put a towel down on that chair.
I mean, it is National Masturbation Month. So.
Exactly.
When is it not National Masturbation Month?
But Lux runs Fleshbot, Fleshbot Fiction, Friday night? What?
Fleshbot Friday.
How did I not remember that? Like,
the Fleshbot Empire.
And our new friend, Ellen Stagg, who has stagstreet.com full of beautiful naked ladies.
Mm-hmm. Astonishingly good erotic photography. So let's get to it. Look at these awkward people at this date table, Lux. You got any advice for them? Maybe she could take one of your classes.
I'm getting at. Their losses. Yes. No. In addition to all my Fleshbot Empire, I'm also about to start doing sex ed classes at Shag in Williamsburg. I'm really super excited. It started with them asking if I would be the sex educator for their bachelorette parties. Where yes, you can book a bachelorette party, and I'll.
Okay, this is talk not about. The sex ed that I was exposed to in ninth grade health class.
No, it's a little more informative. I know
a little more hands on.
Well, yeah, there's that too.
Whoa, yeah,
but, it's not
as
just
a never
hands
nude.
Right
I will
here.
Not be at the G spot class, but I. Applaud you.
So most of the classes are just kind of the basic standard, like very informative, but clothes on, information only. You know, we've got talking dirty, sexting, blowjobs, G-spot, all of that. But I've also been asked to do a more hands-on G-spot workshop, which is happening in June at Shag. Again, we love shag.com.
Yes, we do love Shag.
Yes. And it is, I'm very, very excited for this because it's going to be a two-hour workshop. The first hour is just information, like what is the G-spot? What questions do you have about the G-spot? How do you find it? And then second hour, you actually get to do it. You get to, you and a partner will get to, in the environment of the class, learn how to find your G-spot.
So if someone comes partner free, are you willing to go where, you know, and help them?
I am
hands-on are you willing to get, Lux?
I see it as, you know, I always tell people I became a sex educator because I was too lazy to go to med school and be a gynecologist.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it, for me, it's more about the other person's comfort, but I think there are ways to do it. Obviously, I would use gloves and toys and only do as far as they're comfortable, but, you know, I'm totally comfortable with helping educate people. But one of the reasons why we're starting it as a couples class is because then we don't have to necessarily broach that with people.
Right.
Because they have someone that they are comfortable with having touched them. And we've talked about just different ways to make it a more comfortable environment for people. So maybe like modesty shields. If people, you know, you might be comfortable coming to this class, but you don't necessarily want everybody to see you.
Right.
And obviously like snacks and tea and have a very positive environment.
So what would your advice be for this poor sap here who's, you know, obviously having a rough time having brunch, brunch of shame apparently, because neither of them got what they wanted last night.
I know, I think they need some better communication. I mean, that's...
Or more booze.
Or more booze, which
maybe
is kind of lessening.
So, Ellen, you do commercial work, and and then you also have all these beautiful nudes. How did you get into shooting naked ladies?
About 7.5 years ago, I met Justine Jolie, the lesbian queen of porn, and she was the first one to get, like, fully naked for me. And I've been doing photography for coming up on 19 years, and whenever I was doing erotica, I was asking friends, and they would only go so far with me or want to wear masks or, like, had their head cuts off or not put it on the internet. And then Justine was, like, the first one who was, like, fully nude, vagina, everything.
And what a beautiful, like...
I mean, I didn't know the gift that I was getting with her as being my first, you know?
It wasn't like your hippie grandma volunteered
to
show pink.
Oh, my God, yeah. It was amazing. And then that just snowballed. And she introduced me to more people. And, yeah, and then I was like, maybe I should start a site for this. I don't know where to put these images. Because I offered it to some other websites that I thought would be interested in erotica, but they thought it was, like, a little too porny. Or they wanted more, like, soft lighting couples in the East Village.
Because that's
going
what women
down on
like.
Each other. Yeah.
We like soft lighting, the Barbara Walters focus.
Exactly.
More and Vaseline on the lens.
Yes. So then I started just a free blog to start getting, like, people interested, and that's how I met Lux, and then I started a paid one.
So what do people get when they subscribe?
Well, Monday through Friday, it's a blog, so you get to see images of either what I've been working on or what I've shot in the past. But Mondays and Fridays, if you pay, you get full sets. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, it's teaser images of what I've done most recently, and then Wednesdays is behind-the-scenes video.
So how much time does this take?
A lot.
Yeah.
I have, like, a whole army of interns and everything else.
Oh, wow. Mike wants to intern.
No, actually, I want to have my photo taken.
Well,
are you shooting men as well? Suppose I wanted, you know, to make a boudoir shot for
my
sweetheart.
Well, I do boudoir photography on the side, and I just call them private clients. So then that way nobody sees it. If you want to share it with your friends,
so
you're
kind of George Costanza style, you know?
I just shot this burlesque dancer, Stash Novak, naked. And he's a man on, like, a sheepskin rug, Burt Reynolds style.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Right. Burt Reynolds style, shag, Playgirl. You know, I was a Playgirl model. Did you know that? It's true.
No,
I was a Playgirl.
I had no idea.
Well, I hate to disappoint you, Lux, but I was fully clothed. And I think it's the August 1990 issue of Playgirl. When I worked for High Society at Cherry Magazine, which is part of the same company, used to be Crescent, or used to be Drake, and then it became Crescent, and I don't even know what the fuck they are now. They're such, you know, they went down, that company went down the largest, like, consumer credit card fraud case in the United States history. I mean, I knew they were, you know, fucking thieving. I just didn't know they were fucking stupid, because that was at the the advent of credit card porn and, you know, internet porn, whatever. Yeah. And they were just like double charging people, triple charging people once they had that credit card.
Because people aren't going to fight it because then they'll be embarrassed in court when they have, it's like my nudie mask.
Yeah, I wasn't there the day that the U.S. Marshals came and took everybody's computer. I'm really sorry I missed that. But I was friendly with the Playgirl staff, and they needed someone who had, they picked me because actually I borrowed the clothes from our friend Peter Landau. They needed the worst dressed person of all time for this photo shoot. And Peter, I had this Madras jacket and these velvet bell bottoms. They looked like they were made from like toilet seat covers. And this very loud tie. And they gave me this big box of candy and some flowers. And I was like, clothes don't make the man. Or, you know, it was this like kooky relationship story.
Yeah.
But it was great. I got like a model's face. So there I was. And I showed it to my grandmother. And she said it was very charming. She did linger over the centerfold of Malik, though, for a little while, before she got to my fully clothed, nice Jewish boy who doesn't know how to dress photo. But yes, I was a Playgirl model.
I never knew you were a model, too. So much inside.
Actor, model, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
But isn't everybody?
So, Ellen, but you did this male burlesque guy, but do you do men as a matter of course?
I did shoot, actually, for Playgirl back in the day when it was still a monthly magazine, but recently, I've been only working with women.
Hasn't Playgirl now finally admitted, like, embraced the gay?
They did. A couple of years ago, they folded the magazine and went online only, and they were just kind of like, okay, actually, we're a gay publication.
Because I had a job interview there, and they're like, I was like, oh, come on, this is a gay mag. And which was like the wrong thing to say, because like, yeah. No, you know, how
they really wanted
Midwest.
To keep the kayfabe that was being largely read by like college students in the Midwest.
Yeah,
you know, who are like,
I do think some women.
Yeah,
you know, I think.
But
I don't think would.
Yeah, like, yeah.
But yeah, no, and then when they had their whole Levi Johnston thing, they relaunched as a quarterly magazine. But I think they were just sort of like, okay. But it's interesting because I know Ronnie Koenig, who was editor in chief briefly years and years ago, like over a decade ago actually, because when I met her, she was posted, and she said like, you know, yeah, it was kind of the unspoken thing that, like, we're a magazine for women. But she did, they did some reader contest where she met, like, an actual female Playgirl reader. And she was like, oh, wow, these women are out there.
No, I think they did exist. I think there was, there was probably maybe even as high as, like, 40% of the readership.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, obviously, there was a certain amount of gay men, especially gay men outside of big cities where it's hard to get, you know, gay porn on the newsstand.
Yeah.
New York, of course, you know, it's an embarrassment of riches if you're looking for a cock and balls magazine.
Yeah.
The worst thing about Playgirl that really used to upset us, the guys who worked for the porn magazines downstairs, is they really looked at us with disdain. They really looked at the men's magazines that we were all pigs. And I just thought it was like the most, you know, kind of duplicitous, hypocritical kind of thing, you know. Which,
yeah.
You know, I mean,
Playgirl. You guys kind of were pigs.
And Playgirl,
but, I mean,
sure we were.
The best was the centerfold that wiped clean. That was such a great invention. Like, anyway.
Well, early on in our relationship, Judy wrote some pornography for me.
Oh, nice.
For Climax magazine, the short-lived Climax.
That was the one that wiped clean. Have your way with it and still reuse it. This is like pre-real internet free stuff.
That was, yeah, the free internet was, man, it was different then. It was a different world, right?
I mean,
the pornography.
The slow world.
The slow world, but it's good slow, like slow food.
Yeah.
You know, I was at Showworld Palace the other night. You know, former People World Emporium. I had gone to, because, you know, since the Giuliani 80, 20, 60, 40, whatever that fucking law is, which is, it still stands an obvious First Amendment violation. You know, they do like off-Broadway plays and these sort of touristy musical stuff.
Yeah.
So I went to this pretty bad, actually, musical about hipsters in Bushwick. Can you imagine such a thing? I was taken by a friend of mine who was friends with the producer. Oh, Judy, you would have fucking hated it. I mean, it was just like every joke that you've ever heard in your life about hipsters with these guys with, you know,
like
artisanal wool
story.
Sweaters. Those time stories.
Yeah. The one that just came out.
Jesus Christ, right? Well, there's the times, you know, 13 years behind every trend. but we went next door to the old Showworld Palace because it's not the big building anymore. It's sort of like in this side shop, but in the basement. And there are just rooms full of straight magazines, old National Geographics, crossword puzzles, soap opera digest, Sports Illustrated, all this like crazy, like, you know, TV soap opera magazines from the 60s and 70s, because they need to have that to make the porn content legit.
They don't have girls there.
There are no live girls there anymore, but there are peep booths, and I was very happy to find out, though, that they still have the old tokens.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Which are awesome. So I bought like a big handful of, you know, the old Show World tokens, which you haven't seen.
Our friend Carly made cufflinks.
That's right. Yeah, back in the day.
Shag had a tie tack.
It says World's Greatest Show Place on one side, the other side's a silhouette of a naked girl, some musical notes. I mean, it's wonderful. It's Las Vegas, 1969. It hasn't really changed.
Except for the live girls.
Boy, it was something else back then.
No more live nude girls.
I have to say, it was a sad day when they closed the last open window peep.
Well, so what are we going to hear on our break while we chow down on some pizza?
Well, Joe the engineer did a hard target search. We found the theme from Candy Stripers.
Okay.
Some classic 70s porn. Anyway, it's with Lux and Alan, Mike and Judy, Joe the engineer on the Heritage Radio Network. We'll see you guys in a second. It's Candy Stripers.
Nice.
She's the doctor of love, she's the girl that comes through. She can heal the sick, make your dreams come true. All you need is her arm and a dose of her love. Take the shot that you'll have. We'll have a party tonight. We're gonna party.
COD.
Pick it up, waiting room 1.
All right, we're back.
I was a candy striper.
Really?
With my mouth full of pizza, yeah. I was a candy striper in St. Barnabas Hospital in Livingston, New Jersey. And the woman who ran the thing hated me, so she would make me do the least desirable job, which was to deliver meals to people. And everyone would be so upset. I'd come in and they're like, oh, cute teenage girl. And then it's like, oh, she's carrying this tray full of shit.
Did you have sex with all the doctors?
All of the doctors, some of the patients, all of the orderlies, one of the ambulance drivers. It was a pretty wild time.
I love back in the day when I remember I actually had a copy of Candy Stripers, and of course it was on a VHS cassette. You know, back when porn was big and bulky.
And you had the soundtrack on an 8-track, I bet.
Oh, man. Wasn't that great, though? I mean, I loved back in the day when they used to make music, you know, original music for porn movies, and actually bothered to record a theme song. I think that's not really the status quo these days, right?
There was one AVN Awards that I went to that Flo Rida was at because he had done a song for a porn movie. And Flava Flav came with him.
I feel like I've seen Burning Angel do...
They have, like, yeah, because they really work with punk musicians, so they do.
Yeah, yeah.
I wish someone would call me to do some porn soundtrack music. I have a wah-wah pedal. And a vibra slap, if you know what, happen to know what a vibra slap is. I know it sounds like the kind of thing you might find in your sex ed class. But
I want a compilation album of the best of 2013 porn music. I mean, that'd be great.
Yeah, probably 1978 porn music would be even cooler.
Yeah, it would even be better, but like it would be nice to hear what they're making these days, too.
So what is the state of the art of pornography these days? I'm woefully behind.
It's actually been kind of interesting because, you know, the internet came, and in a lot of ways, the internet was great for porn because suddenly it was a lot more discreet, it was a lot easier to get. People who would never go to a porno shop are totally comfortable, like, going to their computer and getting some porn. But then, as happened in all industries, the internet also fostered piracy. So you could get it really cheap and really... You get it really easily and really discreetly, but why would you pay for it? Because there's all this free stuff. What's happening now, for a while, people like the music industry, tried to fight piracy, and now they're just sort of like, well, that didn't work very well. What can we do to salvage this industry? So one of my favorite sites is actually Woodrocket, which is a free site, but it's all legal. They create or license all the content that's there. It's The home of SpongeBob SquareNuts and Sex Toy Story. And, oh, what was the one? Oh, Porks and Recreation. And it's,
I just saw something about Porks and Recreation.
It's run by a good friend of mine, and they're trying to rework this way of saying, okay, how can we give people the free content they want while also paying producers, paying performers, so not screwing everybody over?
How do they make money? Is it advertising?
Advertising supported. They do product placement, which is kind of interesting. They have their own, like, toy store. They're experimenting, but a lot of it right now is product placement and advertising.
What kind of, like, Pepsi isn't going to be in there?
It's been, like, well, in Parks and Recreation, there was a lube.
Okay.
That they're like, Ron Rana uses this lube. You can use this lube, too.
But it wouldn't be, like, the lube, what was it, like, Trojan's lube. It's probably, like, more independent. Because, those guys, they make vibrators and lube, and they still don't want to be dirty.
They're not sex toys. No, it's zero tolerance, I think. It's one of, the adult industry companies. But there's some sex toy, but not, like, mainstream. It's actually funny that you bring up Trojan, because as we mentioned before, I'm doing Fleshbot Fiction, which is a line of erotica. It's erotica ebooks, and one of the things we've been toying with is finding sponsors for certain stories. So the stories would be given out free, there'd be some branding, and I was like, one thing that would be awesome is a line of safer sex erotica.
That'd be great.
So I'm now, if anybody listening to this is a condom company who wants to sponsor a line of safer sex erotica, you can always reach out to me. Because Trojan was one of the ones where I have a friend who does something with Trojan. But he was like, they have 70% of the market share. They're not going to do something
right. That's
in any way risky. And it's like,
I'm astonished though when I go to my local CVS or Rite Aid.
Yeah.
Like the Trojan branded product, I mean, the personal massagers and the His and Her Ice and Fire lube. I mean, it's pretty far out. I mean, it's pretty erotic. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful that they can put it on the shelves and that people can be open enough without having to go, to a sex boutique or a sex toy store.
Yeah.
And they can find it. Right there, 24 hours a day, I can get a vibrator.
I think it's super
awesome.
Which
I think is good. That's why I live in New York, actually.
I wish those vibrators were better, but...
Oh, they're very weak.
Yeah, they're not very good vibrators.
Yeah, I can't say I've road tested them.
Opening the conversation, and like the Duane Reade Stocks vibrators, that's awesome.
And cock rings.
Vibrating cock rings for a dollar.
Like, that's pretty great.
And yet some people will still say there's no such thing as progress.
When I worked in my after-school job as in a drugstore in New Jersey... Mm-hmm. It was run by these two, Italian-American Catholic guys who kept all the condoms behind the counter. So, and it was a very small store, so these guys would come in, and, there's a 16-year-old girl at the register, and they would look at every single thing in the store, and I'm like, oh, I know they just want condoms, Frank. And then, finally Frank or Joe would come out from behind the counter and go, come here, sir, can I help you? And then the poor guy would get his condoms. Like, this is why there's pregnancy.
Yeah,
condom
shame
shaming.
People. You're not going to prevent them from having sex. You're just going to prevent them from doing it safely.
Right. So, Ellen, what do you have coming up that we should look out for?
I'm showing at Parlor Gallery in Asbury Park, New Jersey.
I love the Parlor Gallery in Asbury Park. My good friend's down there.
I love that gallery. It's the, I think, the fifth year in a row I'm showing at their erotica show on June 8th.
Oh, cool.
And then I'm always a part of Fleshbot Fridays with Lux. I always sponsor and give out free membership to my site or art or book or whatever. And I love that party. It's one of my favorite Friday nights by far.
What happens at Fleshbot Friday? Is it a giant orgy? Should people be really afraid?
No, they should not be afraid because it's free.
Free.
That's the first
fun.
Thing. Yeah, we all love free as we love this free pizza right now. But... Yeah, no, it's free. There's drink specials, and then there's usually three incredibly amazing burlesque performers. And then it's hosted by a porn star, and it's emceed by Matt Holtzclaw, who's a magician and an incredible friend of mine.
Ooh, a magician?
Yes. Yeah. And once in a while, he does really cool magic shows.
I'm such a geek. It's like I'm listening porn, sex, like, ooh, a magician.
It's at Headquarters Gentlemen's Club.
On 38th between 10th and 11th.
Well, the joke used to always be when we used to get invited to these big fetishy parties, at Screw, when I was working at Screw, it was like going to a Star Trek convention. It was all dudes. They're the most geeky people of all time. If you weren't dressed right, and if your vinyl PVC mask, whatever it was, not exactly right, or if it was like last year's Catwoman whip or whatever, you would be shunned. It was very geeky.
I bet there's no shunning at Fleshbot Friday.
No, not at all. The opposite.
We're so welcoming.
It's the big tent. The flesh pot is a big tent.
Free vibrators and condoms.
And yeah, and porn.
And we have sex trivia.
Yeah. And if you win the sex trivia questions, then you get free things like
I bet you can't get a sex trivia question past Judy McGuire.
I bet you probably could, but I'm curious.
Yeah. I mean, it depends. I mean,
porn trivia, I'm not going to get.
I'm trying to remember some of the more recent questions, because I try to run the gamut. Like, so sometimes it's like sex and pop culture, sometimes it's anatomy, sometimes it's porn.
Will there be a question about the Teen Mom James Dean sex tape looks? Because I'm very curious about that.
I gotta do that one. Actually, there might have been one about that at the last one. Oh, like one of like an easy one was like what porn star was just on the cover of the Village Voice?
Who
reads the Village Voice anymore?
Stoya.
See, she's your friend. I should have guessed her right away. Any porn star question, I just should have said Stoya.
I know, right?
She is super foxy.
The only question I got right once at Fleshbot Fridays was, what is the most, this bland vegetable that's actually an aphrodisiac?
What is it?
Celery.
Oh, it's supposed to make your semen taste better, too, according to Tommy Lee.
Tommy Lee loved the celery. In fact, he in his book, Screw thought it was dirty. When I reviewed that book for Screw, it was like, we felt like we needed to take a shower after reading that book. And he advised eating a stalk of celery for like extra volume in your splooge. And in fact, had gone so far into this theory that he had invented what I call the splooge font.
Yeah.
So his penis could comment on it, sort of like the Greek chorus, which was in this like sort of like icky.
Oh my god!
It was a splooge font. It was like it was like the worst.
Yeah, little sidebars of semen.
Even for Motley Crue, it was a low.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Wow, I guess this is my next trivia. But
which rock star invented the splooge font?
Tommy Lee's gift to typesetting. Even Screw was disgusted.
So funny.
Oh my god.
But you know, speaking of the like erotic fiction and stuff, and you know, I wrote a lot of porn novels back in the day, in the pre-internet day, but what's always was the most shocking thing to me is how much filth there is in like pre-50 Shades of this, that, and the other thing. Was I stumbled upon some of the books my mom was reading in the 70s, like Arthur Haley, right? And you know, and this is where the cocaine penis began, and somewhere in my mom's head there's a cocaine penis. This is like kind of, maybe I shouldn't be bringing this up on the radio, but you know, I found this book in my mom's house. It was one of these Arthur Haley books, you know, the Money Changers and all these, you know, captains of industry and their call girls. And I just opened the page where some guy was putting a bunch of cocaine on his dick before he was like fucking his Asian call girl up the ass on his round, you know, bed that revolved. I was like, oh my god, right? That's what my
women were always reading erotica,
right? Yeah. Right. But I mean, it wasn't even erotic, and this was like brutal. Although, if you ever find any of my porn books that I wrote in the 80s, in every single one, someone is putting cocaine on their penis. Okay, it's sort of like my tag.
As a shout-out to...
It's my tag.
Hey, Mom.
The mom who cannot be mentioned by name.
But she does have a cocaine penis somewhere in her head. It's pretty disturbing. Next, you know, when Mother's Day comes up, you know, we interviewed my mom on the radio last year for Mother's Day, and your first question was, So, Mrs. Edison, where did you go wrong? What I'm saying was the cocaine penis.
But you did not mention cocaine penis when you had your mother on the phone.
Goddamn right I didn't.
Did you, chicken?
Goddamn right I didn't.
Chicken shit.
No, I, there's no cocaine penis in any of our stories yet.
Yet.
But now,
I haven't written one yet, Lux.
I know.
Are you going to write an erotic story, Judy?
I write the worst erotica. I just hear, like, Gomer Pyle's voice in my head when I try to write something dirty, and it just comes out really stupid and funny.
I think it's really difficult. Like,
yeah.
This is something, I think it's easy to write something that's kind of, like, comical. I'm trying to do, like, humorous erotica, but to actually be sexy is such a skill. Like, for me, you have to sort of... You can't have any kind of irony. It's you have to really take yourself seriously. And people who do it well, I love them.
Do you write erotica?
I have sometimes, but it's hard for me because I can be funny about sex and I can be smart about sex, but to be, like...
I think we call it making love.
Yeah. To be, like, genuine about it, I'm like... doesn't really go with my writing. But, you know, the writers that we've brought on, like, a lot of them, they do it really well. And I'm like, this is really hot. And I don't feel like you're not, like, talking about quivering members and quims.
No.
And it's really good.
Don't you also find it kind of funny when you read something that a friend wrote and you're kind of turned on? That, like, maybe it's the Catholic school in me, but I get really uncomfortable. Like,
I've just kind of accepted it, like, given the line of work that I do. I mean, I watch my friends have sex.
Okay. and then review it.
I know. good blowjob, friend. You just get to...
So before we go, do you have any blowjob tips for the kids in the audience?
Okay, so if it's a circumcised dick, on the underside where the head of the penis meets the shaft, there's a spot there that's actually really, really sensitive, and I find that kind of tonguing that spot is often good. Obviously, everybody's different, and I'm not going to give any, like, guaranteed-to-work tips, but that is a good starting point, I find.
The peanut gallery is against that spot.
Well, it's good to know the Heritage Radio staff was circumcised anyway.
Or maybe not. You know, maybe that's why there's the downvote.
Well, as a Jewish member. The staff here, yeah, I'd say that's a good place to start. All right, fleshpot.com. Fleshpot Fridays.
Fleshpotfiction.com. Don't forget Ellen.
Stagstreet.com.
Snagstreet.com. It's
Naked
awesome.
Ladies.
Over 100 of them.
It's really awesome. We're going to talk because I think I need a boudoir shot.
Yeah, let's right? do this.
We find the shag carpet.
Next week, we talk to Paul Gerard from Exchange Alley about food.
Oh, food. Maybe you guys can come back and hot it up a little bit. Okay, so for Judy McGuire, for Lux and Ellen, for Joe the engineer, and Brandon, our corporate master. It's the Mike and Judy Show. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaeli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.